There is trouble in paradise. The government parties have fallen out with each other.
No, we're only a year and a half in government.
In
terms of this arrangement.
There's constant charging against me. Spin because he has no case against us when it comes to
5 to 9.
My charge against him is he's obsessed with innuendo and conspiracy theories.
It's not good enough to just pass the buck. There is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and ultimately somebody has to bear responsibility.
Yeah, we're in the Houses of Parliament on national television.
Hello and welcome to our final Your Politics podcast of the political season. And with the Dáil rising for the summer recess, there's a holiday atmosphere here in the sunshine in Leinster House. But there are, of course, plenty of political storm clouds around. Joining me from our political team, Conor McMorrow, Aisling Kenny, Micheál Lehane and David Murphy. And Aisling, it was a week when you couldn't avoid the politics of the Mercosur deal. So Aisling, let's start with what was happening inside the Dáil, because we had the angry farmers outside, we had the politicians dealing with this inside. The Sinn Féin motion, what was happening there and what was said?
Yes, that's right, Áine. Well, as farmers were protesting outside the Dáil yesterday, you know, at the beginning of the day we had leaders' questions, and we had Sinn Féin's Mary Lou MacDonald basically accusing the government of selling out Irish farmers, and you can hear that clip now.
The Mercosur deal represents a sellout of Irish farmers and their families. It's devastating news for the rural economy, and it flies in the face of commitments made to tackle climate change.
In response, the Taoiseach said the deal would pale in significance for farmers if there's a no-deal Brexit. And then, you know, later in the day, Áine, there was robust exchanges as the Sinn Féin motion on the deal was debated. There were very passionate exchanges from rural independent TDs like Michael Fitzmaurice and Danny Healy-Ray, and they were basically expressing their anger about this deal and saying the government was selling out Irish farmers by getting involved in the Mercosur trade deal.
And you know what, again, was very, very striking? I remember talking to George Lee on the News at One about this during the week. When the farmers were protesting outside, was the anger, the range of farmers that were there. It wasn't just beef farmers. So talk to us about those quite heated scenes that were going on outside the Dáil at the same time.
Yeah, that's right, Áine. I actually spoke to some of the farmers there yesterday, and they actually, they're hugely angry for many reasons. First of all, this Mercosur trade deal, they say it's the nail in the coffin now because they're facing a no-deal Brexit. They're also getting a very low price for their beef. They're saying that factories aren't paying them enough and that the retailer is making several times more than they are. So there's a lot to this, and farmers are angry for a number of reasons. So they had placards yesterday, you know, just expressing their anger, and they also, you know, left boots, a pile of boots at the gate of the Dáil, and they were saying this symbolised the death of the industry, because that's what they say this is.
Let's hear a couple of those clips now.
We'll never again get the genie back in the bottle. They'll be like the New Zealand butter coming to England. They'll keep the price of beef forever down, and we're going to be left in the lurch.
Sure, we blame the Irish government. That's why they're being shoved aside and walked on. They're taking all rules and regulations from Europe, and we can't sustain that. So we can't tolerate this anymore, you know. Our incomes are down and we have to do something about it.
Do you know, Micheál, listening to those farmers, and I was struck as well by an exchange online in which Jackie Cahill, Fianna Fáil's Jackie Cahill, was also challenged by a very angry farmer. What can you read into the politics of this and the politics of rural Ireland and Leinster House?
Yeah, there was a big line for a long time, wasn't there, that the economic recovery hadn't got into rural Ireland, and then that changed. So what you have now is, yes, a recovery in some parts, nowhere back to the level that it was before, because in many parts of rural Ireland, the only economic recovery that really works, and I know that from where I come from myself, is that you need another building boom, because you have seen agriculture decline to the extent that it has. And what you have is another storm coming round now in two forms, Mercosur and then Brexit as well. So the beef industry and the small farmer who has the few cows for beef like that, who doesn't have dairy, that small profit margin, in many cases that's what it is, that now is looks to be in serious decline as well. I thought with the Jackie Cahill exchange, it was interesting because it shows that while Fianna Fáil have real zest about them since those local elections, and they have at the same time watched Leo Varadkar struggle a bit, that charge that is made against them, that they are the one keeping this government in power. You could see that's there too, and that is remains a challenge mm-hmm. for them, despite that recovery and the seeming good health therein after the local elections.
And I also thought interesting as well to look at, you know, the vehemence of Sinn Féin, and as you were saying, Aisling, mm-hmm. a lot of the independent TDs, again, those local election results showing they could be under pressure in a general election. The Mercosur deal, they're tapping right into that vein of anger in rural Ireland.
I thought Sinn Féin were actually very excited that it was their motion that filled the gallery with farmers for the first time. So after a very difficult few months, it was Sinn Féin, the non-farmers, wouldn't be associated with farmers, let's say, who'd managed to fill the gallery full of farmers.
And actually, Anya, you mentioned Jackie Cahill, Fianna Fáil. I was there yesterday when he was actually attacked, really, by a farmer. And, you know, one of the things that the farmer was angry about was Fianna Fáil continuing to support Fine Gael in the confidence and supply agreement. And he was shouting at him and he basically said, "I'm not voting for Fianna Fáil again." So he was actually blaming Fianna Fáil for the problems farmers are facing.
And it is that, isn't it? That very, very local politics. But David, maybe talk to us about, you know, it's not just ourselves talking about this. How's Mercosur going down in the South American countries that are going to be the other side of this trade deal if it goes through?
Well, they don't really think that they've got that much, and they really see it as just an opening position. And it's worth bearing in mind in all of this that trade goes both ways, and that Europe is going to get a lot of benefit by being able to sell into South America with zero or little tariffs. And there's a whole bunch of other goods and services that South America are going to be selling into Europe. So it's much broader than that. And we've got to remember that trade lifts people out of poverty, and it lifts people out of poverty right around the world. And Ireland is a country that has benefited an awful lot from trade. And Irish farmers are people who've benefited a lot from trade, and they've benefited from the EU. And along comes something that has an aspect they don't like, and there seems to be war over it. I think perhaps it may be incumbent in the context of the negotiations with Brexit to take a broad view of this deal before settling on one particular aspect. That's not to say there aren't small farmers who will be negatively affected. There's no doubt about that. But there is something broader about this too.
I thought the political defence was interesting. Sorry, Aisling, no, when Leo Varadkar said, well, you think Mercosur might be bad, but wait a second, there's a nightmare storm coming around the corner in the form of Brexit. When you're leaning on that as your defence, it probably shows you are struggling a bit with the rural vote. And this is huge for Fine Gael, isn't it? And there's no winning it at the moment. And if you look back to the key in many ways where Fine Gael was going to try and make an advancement in the next general election, and that was winning back the 9 seats that were lost in Munster. And you look at this range of issues and you say, well, that's quite a challenge right now.
And the Taoiseach mentioned a no-deal Brexit yesterday. And, you know, when you look at Brexit, it actually is a huge threat to farmers, or the threat of a no-deal Brexit, because the UK is the biggest market for Irish farmers. 298,000 tonnes of beef went to the UK in 2018. So farmers are now facing tariffs. You know, so this is nearly a bigger threat than Mercosur, basically.
And all of this may look very different in the autumn. I want to talk about another intriguing story to do with the National Lottery and legislation on the regulation of online gambling. Connor, you've been looking at this.
Yeah, we've had the lottery for over 30 years now, and in a submission from the National Lottery to a number of TDs that we got to see, it showed that for every €1 spent on National Lottery games, 57 cents goes out in prizes, 9% goes for administration and whatnot, and 6% goes to retailers, but a further 28 cents in the euro goes to the Good Causes Fund. This is basically a fund for sports clubs, charitable and voluntary organisations. And
that's all transparent, and as people would expect it to be. Yeah, that's what you have. Well, you pay the lottery and it's going to a good cause.
Every sports club in Ireland have a plaque where they've got money at some point or from the National Lottery. Basically, the difficulty is that in a debate on the lottery and gaming legislation that is coming through at the Justice Committee, a number of TDs have tried to bring in a ban on a betting on the National Lottery, which is happening in bookmakers' shops and on online.
Okay, so now explain this to me, because I wasn't aware this was a phenomenon. I'm not exactly a gambler myself.
Basically, you can go into a bookmaker's or go online on your bookmaker's website and bet for as little as 5 cents on the number of, on 2 numbers coming up in the lottery, on 4 numbers, whatever number combinations. So it's quite big business. For example, Paddy Power issued a press release the other day where basically person in Donegal won €33,000 on the back of a €1 bet. Basically, they correctly guessed four numbers in Wednesday night's Euro Millions. So there's a lot of money changing hands in this. The issue is when you put money on in the bookmakers, that money has been bet on the National Lottery, but none of it is going to the Good Causes Fund, which is obviously benefits the voluntary organisations. So a number of TDs are looking for a ban on this betting within bookmaker shops, so the money will find its way to the National Lottery.
What was the reaction of politicians when this came up?
Yeah, so basically, Donal Colera is one of the people who is speaking about it.
From Sinn Féin?
Yeah, yes, the National Lottery are saying €400 million is being spent. They're losing €400 million a year on this, and €110 million of that would go to the Good Causes Fund. So both Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin are looking for the ban. Jim O'Callaghan from Sinn Féin is looking for a ban, basically saying that offshore and online speculators are benefiting from our National Lottery, and it's not going into the central fund, which benefits good causes. So you had also people like Peter Fitzpatrick from Fine Gael, who's basically arguing that the betting shops create jobs, and if you bring in a ban on this, you could end up having a further ban on GAA clubs having lotteries, and it could lead to further bans. So he was against it. He's also from a town where Boyle Sports are a big employer. So in the end, basically the government opposed it, and you had Minister of State David Stanton saying that the issue with accepting the amendment, this is on the basis of advice from the Attorney General, it could lead to further demands from the National Lottery to prohibit local lotteries, so you could have GAA lotteries banned, and that's a key part of their fundraising.
It's an intriguing one, David, isn't it? Because there was such discussion when the lottery was set up about the way it would be, and that it was important that gambling was connected to good causes. That was so important.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this is that this proposal, which Sinn Féin suggested last night to ban bookies taking bets on lotteries, that's actually banned in other European countries. And the idea is that the activity of the National Lottery is the preserve of the state, and a big chunk of that money goes to good causes. And it's interesting to see, obviously, the bookmakers have a big concern about this. It's estimated about 10% of the revenue of the bookies is generated from from this activity. So I think the key issue here is that... I'll just have a quick sip of water.
oh, please do. We don't want to talk.
I think the key issue here is that the bookies are making something in the region of €400 million in revenue out of this. And if this Sinn Féin amendment goes through, what would actually happen is they would lose out on that revenue. So it's really quite significant. And for the National Lottery, €100 million in good cause money, they see seeping out through the bookies. So I think that's the major concern with all of this. And there's a lot of money at stake. It's going to be before the Oireachtas in the autumn. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
The bookmakers have made the point as well, and a number of TDs were clearly lobbied by the bookmakers, making the point that this practice has gone on for 25 years, and a lot of people of pensionable age walk into a bookmaker's on a Saturday, put down a euro and bet in two numbers in the lotto or Euro Millions. And what's wrong with that? It's just a bit of fun. So it's there's definitely more to run it.
I think we'll be hearing more about this.
It's going to come up again at report stage. The amendment wasn't voted on the other night, but after the summer recess, we'll be returning to this debate.
Yeah, amazing numbers. By the way, Micheál, come here to me. Is it a story of Phil and Philomena when it comes to our nomination to the European Commission?
Well, it could be, but the mood around Leinster House last night, and remember that the German visitors were brought into the Fine Gael parliamentary party, so Alexander Dubrandt of the CDU party was there, so no one was really saying anything that couldn't be said opposite visitors, as you might expect. But such was the level of determination that it will be Phil Hogan and Phil Hogan's name alone that will go to Brussels. There was also talk that it's fairly certain among some in Fine Gael, in their heads at least, that he will get one of two jobs, that's either trade or energy, and that there could be a vice presidency up for grabs for him as well. So the Irish government are very adamant. I mean, even what they said publicly was fairly strong, saying he's the best candidate, it's a reward for his excellent work, and pointing out too that the new president of the commission hasn't got the full seal of approval from the parliament yet. The undertone there is that she really can't be talking about these things until she is in the job fully. What they were saying away from that was very clear, that they believe here that it is the prerogative of the government here to send out their nomination and that they can't be given instructions.
We'll see what happens in relation to all of that. A lot of people will be watching that space closely. As I say, it's been really an end of term feeling in here, a sense that a lot of people around here are very tired and looking forward to the recess. But on the other hand, the storm clouds that are knocking around the place, and I'm thinking, Micheál, about by-elections, broadband and Brexit.
Yeah, it's too serious to be festive around here, even though there is definitely fatigue. Broadband's very serious. You can see the Public Accounts Committee in their report this week again saying before you sign that contract, you really have to do another cost-benefit analysis. I mean, that's the independent watchdog within here. But of course, the government has swatted aside what AIR has said, and that seems to have run its course now. By-elections seems to be that they will happen, that people are working on that basis, even though it still seems... for many, an extraordinary thing that you could face the electorate and have four by-elections on the one day, but it does seem to be happening. And then, of course, the big massive storm that could be brewing in relation to Brexit. The Thon is just saying something interesting this week, that he's not a gambler, just say he wouldn't be gambling on the lotto there, but he said his view still is, even though all the preparations have to be made, is that there won't be a hard Brexit. But of course, this time it's serious, and the plans have to be serious, because there was a tacit agreement reached the last time with the European Commission that there was always going to be an extension in March. So none of that serious, sensitive talking took place. But it is now. And the government have nudged the public consciousness now in the general direction of checks. And the only thing that we know for definite is now that they won't be at or near the border. But there will be checks now. And you can say whatever you want. The document says associated checks. Mm-hmm. No one in government has used those words, but they have written it down. What the Thonish just said, well, his wording was interesting, saying you have to take action somewhere in the economy. Where's the somewhere?
Yes, and I mean, those figures in those cabinet briefings in relation to Brexit and the potential impact on the economy, it does look absolutely horrendous. And all this, of course, against the context of trying to draw up a budget, David. I mean, and then, of course, another B word, Boris, because it looks as if he's going to be leader of the Conservative Party. And we see what's happening in the world right now. So, yes, a lot of storm clouds beginning with B around the place.
That's right. Well, in terms of the budget thing, the real tricky thing is that is there going to be a Brexit in October or isn't there? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is what type of Brexit there's going to be. And Pascal Donoghue is beginning to frame his budget along those lines, and he's going to have a tricky task over the summer. But just to Micheál's point, which I think is becoming a key one for businesses right now, the government's message is interesting at the moment, because it's saying to businesses, get ready. Do everything you can, contact the revenue commissioners, get all those forms and registrations you need to get done, get going, don't leave it till the last minute. But then businesses are turning around and saying, okay, well, this business of checks, what checks, where? And the government is saying, well, they're not going to be on the border, but we don't know yet where they're going to be. And in that context, it's very difficult for a business to prepare when it doesn't know exactly what it's going to be preparing for. Are these going to be checks that will be in warehouses, in storage facilities, in farmyards? We don't actually know. And in that, in the absence of that information, I think the only preparation they can do relates to those types of things like registration. But I think it's very difficult for many businesses considering this is so close now.
Yeah, we're certainly going to be hearing an awful lot about the problems associated with all of this come September. It was nice, though, on the last day of the Dáil going into the summer recess, David, to hear tributes paid to Brendan Grace and, of course, to the political commentator, campaigner, the one and only Noel Whelan.
Noel Whelan would be, I think, very well known to people who've followed political coverage and RTÉ's political coverage as well. Commentator, barrister, Fianna Fáil advisor, only 50 years old. I think those who would have met him found him to be a decent and very thoughtful individual. So I think he will be sadly missed. So we can hear a few of the contributions from the Dáil on his passing.
He was somebody deeply respected, I think, across the political divide, and also liked and someone who was trusted in terms of seeking his counsel and advice. Dying at the age of 50 is a tragedy for his family.
Noel, obviously a county man of my own, I've known his family. His father obviously was a distinguished county councillor for Fianna Fáil in County Wexford, came from the rural area of Ballycullen in New Ross. I've had countless discussions with Noel on public affairs, didn't always agree, but he was somebody of great intellect, great incisiveness, whose views you certainly listened to and was able to marshal words in written form to great effect.
They really were lovely tributes there, Micheál, and I think they caught something that was really important about Noel Whelan, that he cared about politics, not just as a party political game, but he cared about politics for what it was doing for a society.
He did, yeah. And I think one of the most notable things about him was he was a sharp analyst, he was great with figures. But what he had was a generosity and a kindness towards those who were in the arena, and he used to draw that distinction. And if you were in there, well, yes, you do make mistakes sometimes. He had that degree of understanding, which perhaps many others don't. And of course, he did run for election himself as well, which was telling and gave him a greater degree of insight than many of us may have.
Yeah, well, we Conor, yes.
He was one thing we should remember when we're in Leinster House as well. He's one of the people who was instrumental in the campaign to save the Shannon involving that referendum when it looked like the whole country were sick of politicians and wanted rid of a good chunk of them. He got involved in the campaign with the late Fergal Quinn and others, and they managed to turn the tide and save the Upper House. So people in Leinster House will remember him for that.
He'll be missed there. He'll be missed by all of us, but for all the contributions he so generously gave to our programmes over the years. A yeshtey guru anam. Well, we're going to be back with the Your Politics podcast. We'll be back early in September. Thank you to Jack Good and Aisling Kenny on production and editor David Murphy. Please subscribe and leave a review. And don't forget to download Brexit Republic by our colleagues Tony Connolly and Cullum O'Munkon. Enjoy the summer. Slán.